Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Well, it's hard to say because we did it again.
Oh, no. What did we do now?
Folks, the dreaded deadline doom. It's hard to say because if you're listening to this here wording, you know that the dreaded deadline doom has been thrust upon us.
That means I need to drink. Give me a Guinness.
In fact,
and a rat bastard.
A fill-in episode.
I wonder if they could, if I could mix them.
You know, they might. I've seen there's this woman in town called, of course, now I forget her name, but she's known as the Wine Diva. So if you Google that, you'll probably Leslie Miller. And she had a thing where there was a certain wine. You take a sip of Guinness and then you take a sip of the wine. And although the host, Jason Matheson, did not like the taste, because he's not really a beer guy. Matter of fact, they both ended up almost choking on their beer on live television, which was hilarious. But she said, if you take these two together, they actually combine into an interesting combination. That was essentially her whole segment, just pairing wines with each other, as opposed to, you're trying to pair it with food or things like that. So you can always Google that if you're bored, or you can sit back and listen to Corey and I.
I have a question, Joe.
Just one?
Well, yeah, for that topic.
Oh, okay.
Your wife is into wine, right?
Oh, yeah.
Could you ask her what wine goes best when taking a shower?
I will, but right now she is indisposed.
Oh.
And so I don't want to talk about it. You know, no, she could be helpful. Of course, with her, there, as long as you don't get water in the wine, it's probably good. Any wine.
Because, when I'm taking my morning shower, I want to know what wine goes best with that.
Cool.
Because I already know what beer goes best with your morning shower.
Ooh.
And that is the cheapest damn beer you could find.
Yeah. I mean, it's already pretty much watered down. There's no sense doing anything.
Falstaff!
Wow, I didn't know you were going that low. Okay.
I remember when I was a kid and they had, remember the generic packaging had just started? So everything was just a white with black words on it. They had generic beer.
Cool.
And in Central Illinois, the generic beer would say at the bottom, bottled by the Falstaff Brewing Company.
Yep. Nothing's too good for us.
Even when I was in college, we didn't drink Falstaff. We had a little more class.
I don't even think
they exist anymore.
Probably not. I think Bud was the big one. Of course, in college, anything that was free was good enough for me.
If it's correction, free, it's for me.
Correction. Free beer.
So we've missed our deadline.
We did. And unlike in the past, where we've had a long string where we weren't quite sure how we'd get the show going, and I know you jumped in once and did a solo Corey, and I know we have yet to do what I say, just repackage the first episode and go with that, because a lot of people won't even know.
I don't want them to know.
Yeah, well, it's all there free anyway, so they can if they want.
If you want to, that's the other reason why I don't want to repackage stuff. There are people who will repackage their old stuff because their older stuff is behind a paywall, but not us. Our stuff is free. It's always free. We're not going to do a Patreon. We're not going to do a paywall. We're not going to do a special episode you have to give us money for. And you know why that is, Joe?
Because we're above that.
And we've got sponsors like these guys. Believe it or not, kids, this here podcast has sponsors. And that sponsor, since day one, is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host in the whole known universe. And if you need a website, head on over to dreamhost.com, put in code CRAZY, that's K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year. Now, if you would like to advertise here on any of the Solitaire Rose Network podcasts, you can. Just email me at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Also, head on over to eBay and look for user Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z, that's Joe Crazy Writer, who's always telling us about the eBay in every episode of Crazy Comics and Stories. If you would like to contact us, you can do so. You can give us a call at 952-856-0519. Leave a message and we'll play it on the show. Or you can send us an email at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks.
Yep. Always got sponsors.
But one of the things that has changed over the last 10 years we have done this episode is Joe's feelings about omnibuses.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I actually bought one of the earliest omnibuses.
I wonder, what was the first omnibus? You talk while I Google.
Well, the first omnibus I bought was Alias, which came out in 2006. But I already information up here on the Strodetron 2000. The first omnibus actually came out in 2005, and it was Fantastic Four number one. The second one was Alias. The third one was Uncanny X-Men, and the fourth one was the Eternals, which there for a while was selling for a couple hundred dollars. So, and the X-Men actually got all kinds of omnibuses. Spider-Man didn't come along till 2007, which is kind of weird because normally they go Fantastic Four and then Spider-Man.
Do you think you could call it Marvel Masterworks? In the DC archives that they did, would those be considered omnibuses?
No. And the reason for that is they only published 10 issues. Mm.
I turn to Wikipedia and I will read their explanation of an omnibus. And this is what Corey and I will be using. An omnibus edition or omnibus, omnibi?
Omnibus. Yes.
It's a creative work containing one or more works by the same or more rarely different authors. Commonly, two or more components have been previously published as books, but as a collection of shorter works or shorter works collected with one previous book, yada, yada, yada. Omnibus editions help consolidate longer series into fewer books. The price is usually equal to or less than the price of buying each individual edition separately.
Agreed. I made the switch, because when the Alias omnibus came out, it was like, okay, I love this book. How much is each issue? Okay, how much are the trade paperbacks? Well, they're putting out this big hardcover that's got the whole thing, and it's cheaper than buying all the trade paperbacks, and definitely cheaper than buying the hardcovers. And then with a lot of the early Marvel stuff, it's usually collects two or three of the Masterworks. And the Masterworks now are going for $75 to $100 each. And an omnibus goes there are four price points for the Marvel omnibuses. And that's $75, $100, $125, and $150. So even if it just collects two of the Masterworks, that's cheaper than buying the Masterworks.
Now, initially, I did not like omnibuses because they were expensive, they were big, they were heavy, they were tough to read. I don't know. Somebody go back. I'll give you a Joe prize if you can figure out why I didn't like them. But that is what comes to mind. But for the life of me, I could not tell you what the first omnibus was that I bought that started changing my mind. I always liked collected editions, especially when it was like a complete run of stuff. Marvel does every time I look in the previews, I always look for collected edition of, I think the last one I bought was Tigra, because then I know that all of her appearances are there up to a certain point. I bought all the essentials that I could. about a lot of the showcases that DC did. And for me, that was kind of cool because it had the whole run.
And the crossovers.
Yes.
One of the things I really liked about the Essentials was it didn't just, okay, here's all the Spider-Man of Amazing Spider-Man. It's, oh, this is where Spider-Man crossed into this book. Or the Fantastic Four, where there was that early crossover with Daredevil, believe it or not. Or in the later ones, some of those X-Men Essentials, they were just one story because it's, oh, we've got to the point where we're reprinting Mutant Massacre. Well, that crossed over in everything, so it's just going to take one Essential. Or the X-Factor ones, where they tied in with the big X-Men crossovers. I loved Essentials. The fact that publishing Essentials really broke my heart because those were the books I would throw in a bag if I got stuck at the group home, and they were coming out starting in 95. So there were times I would be at the group home for teenage boys, and it'd be, okay, I'm working a Friday night. I'm probably going to get tricked into working an awake overnight shift. Then I have the rest of the weekend off. So I better make sure I got something. And this was before, you know, you could get on the internet and watch TV. This was before all this stuff you had. Basically, we didn't even have cable there.
Corey, so can I interrupt you?
Sure.
I have my beloved wife here. Corey had a question, since you are the closest thing to a wine connoisseur we know. What is the best wine to drink while in the shower?
Yes.
Ah, I called it.
Also, okay. Can I just update everybody? Joe's home for 2 weeks. He might not be around very much longer because I might have to punch him right out. Done.
So this may be the last podcast this for me, Corey. You just never know.
Well, I shall soldier on. But I would throw an essential or two in the bag. That way, if I'm, you know, 3 a.m, all you've got is broadcast TV and the radio, and I'd already, you know, worked out and done this and taken care. So it's okay. Well, I guess I'm going to be reading Spider-Man from the 60s. Just 25 issues. The omnibuses, I jumped on for things like the Eternals and Alias. But it wasn't until after I got my current work position, where I'm actually making decent money, that I went, you know what? I like these books. I like that they're a big, fat chunk of comics. I like that they're reproduced almost better than the masterworks. And they're usually a complete run or a complete story.
Oh, and it helps. It accentuates the artwork. It's assuming the artwork's worthy of that. Avengers The Crossing, I'm looking at you.
Or Golden Age Marvel Comics, which...
Do you remember what your first omnibus was? And by omnibus, are we talking the hardcover?
Yeah, Alias.
Because that might be close to mine, although I think Alpha Flight might have been mine, because that's the first one I remember reading and thinking, okay, this is cool because everything is in it, like we talked about. The crossovers, I have it all in one place. And if I get the urge to read it, pull it off the shelf. Alias, I've got. Actually, I think my daughter has it. But that was one because I had never read it. So for me, an omnibus, there's two things that come into play when I want to buy it. Have I ever read it? And if I haven't, I'm more likely to buy it. Or did I read it like I did Uncanny X-Men? And want to keep it in that type of format where it's fun to read. We talk a lot about omnibuses, especially when previews hits. What's the criteria for you, Corey, that makes you buy the omnibus?
Anymore, it's, is this a story I want to read more than once?
Although you got to admit, when we got Avengers The Crossing for $10, we picked it up.
Yeah, that too. But yeah, I mean, buying it new. Is it a story I'm going to read more than once? What's a good example here? All right, the Alpha Flight book. For me, I remember I read those stories, and I, by the time I tapped out before John Byrne did, because it wasn't what I wanted from the book. I wanted it to be a team book, and it wasn't. It was kind of a individual stories of individual characters, and whenever they'd get together, something terrible would happen, and then they would go their separate ways. And it just, I never cared for that. So I read it back when it came out. If they put out a nice trade paperback of it, I'd pick it up. But for an omnibus, that's not something I'm going to read over and over and over. Or stuff that you will not be able to get anywhere else. The Marvel Universe by Chris Claremont. It collects all of his non-X-Men stuff, including War is Hell, some of the more obscure things he did. I like Chris Claremont. I like 70s stuff. They're not going to put that out as a trade paperback. They did put out a Marvel Visionaries of Chris Claremont, but it's not as comprehensive. So this is the only way I'm going to get all of these stories. Another one is like the Marvel Monster Bus, which collects all the Jack Kirby monster stories. There's no way I'm going to be able to afford all those 50s comics. So there's no other way to get it. Or the Golden Age omnibuses. I picked those up because, again, that's the only way I'm going to get those. Joe, what's your criteria?
Other than the two I mentioned, the big one is, can I afford it that month? Because they have a habit of dumping. They go months without an omnibus, and then all of a sudden, boom, here's 12. And you know, it's Marvel, DC, Image. Those seem to be the big ones. Dark Horse does a lot of theirs as paperbacks, which is cool.
But I love those. I'll pick those up if I just want to read it.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like 25 to 30 issues for $30.
Yeah, I've got the Barbed Wire Omnibus sitting here. And I remember when that came out, when I had my shop, I actually tried it, and it wasn't really my cup of tea. But you know, I think I might have gotten this at Black Friday years ago with when the source was doing a buck for this. Yeah, I'll read it. So, and then I look up on the shelves, and of course I got to grab my glasses quick. I mean, I look at some other things that could be considered omnibus. I've got Zot, the collection by Scott McCloud.
Here's my problem with that. It's only the black and white stuff. First 10 issues hasn't been reprinted for 20 to 30 years. Those are the ones I really, really want.
Yeah. I mean, the Zot black and white's beautiful. I've got the collected Neo the Horse.
Yes.
Google that one, baby. I don't want to get into it. Way up top, my beloved Weapon Brown. I've got both the rare hardcover signed edition and, of course, the paperback that started. I go a little lower. All three Walking Dead. They call them compendiums, but they might as well be omnibuses. So, but for me, an omnibus is actually the Marvel DC Image hardcover big version. I mean, some of them I've got like Solo, if you remember that DC series where they had the artist.
Oh, yes.
And that's
called, not considered an omnibus, but boy, it's really nice.
It is. It's a deluxe edition. It's about the same size. So for us, of course, the omnibuses are like Corey mentioned, they're anywhere from 75 to, I don't even know what the high ones are, 170?
150. 150? They haven't broke 150 yet.
And, of course, we buy them when we pre-order them. Sometimes we get a really deep price cut for about 50% off in some cases. And the only problem we have is because we go through the service we use, we got to prepay them. And usually they're ordering them 6-7 months in advance. So it really gets tough because, and sometimes you luck out. Like when the Peter David one hit, it happened to be a month. I'm talking the Incredible Hulk, Peter David, volume one hit. And I had already read most of these because I had the Visionaries, which were paperbacks. But there's a trend in comics where things that are out of print go up really fast in price. Sometimes it's warranted, especially if it happens to be like a crossover dealing with two properties from different companies. Some of these omnibuses, they've gone really crazy with collector prices. Secret Wars 2, I'm looking at you. Marvel's reprinting a lot of them, to their credit. But I don't know if they'll ever go back to the well on Secret Wars 2. And sometimes it takes time. I've
heard that they might.
That would be nice. Because, at half price, whatever. I've got my opinion on it. Corey has his. But on the Incredible Hulk one, I was able, through the eBay experience, to pick it up even though I didn't order it right away. And I think it's, a four-volume set that'll have the whole run?
Yes.
So that sense of being – and this is one of those where the Peter David run I will reread over and over. I mean, it starts early with the McFarlane run. I kind of dropped it during the Mr. Fix-It thing, but as I read it, it actually got a little better. And, of course, the nice thing here is you look at it, you see the run of Hulk, and then, of course – there was a crossover with Web of Spider-Man, then a crossover with Fantastic Four. And they even included the Marvel Comics Presents, a couple stories in there that Peter David wrote during his run on the Hulk. You know, stories that maybe some of us may never have read if you weren't reading Marvel Comics Present at the time. Now, the other question I have, Gory, have you read all your omnibuses?
All of them? No.
Yeah,
even during not even this, close. We are recording this during a time when people are being asked to stay home more. Here's the thing with my job. I work we're in benefits. So benefits are still, people still have their medical coverage. They still have their dental coverage. They still have questions about it. They still have changes. They're still having babies. Before I was recording, I told Joe, we are recording this during the first week where things have pretty much ground to a halt. Restaurants are pickup and delivery only. Non-essential businesses are being asked to close down, and there are businesses that are fighting over what's essential and what's not. GameStop says that they're an essential business, Joe. Did you know that?
Have you ever seen a gamer without his games?
Did you know that you can pretty much download any game you want? And yeah,
that with comic shops too. But the whole key is, and this is a different podcast, will these guys be around?
Right. The group home I work at, it's not like we could tell the clients, well, we all have to stay home, so you're on your own. So I am just as busy as before. So I don't have them all read. I am reading them, though.
For me, it's always tough to decide which ones I want to sit down and read. And believe me, I've got way more ready to read, including stuff that I've just never read. You know, I'm thinking Batman Grant Morrison's run, a lot of Garth Ennis's Punisher run.
That's so good.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to love it. You're going to love it because it has the same flavor of Preacher without all the supernatural stuff. He has the first series, which is set in the Marvel Universe. But once it's not set in the Marvel Universe anymore, it's just good crime fiction, man.
You know, we started Master of Kung Fu years ago. I've only read the first one. Haven't finished them up yet. So I'm looking forward to doing that. There's a lot that and then I've got tons that I've read. You know, again, Infinity War, Justice League International, Avengers Onslaught, the Silver Surfer run that, I can't remember who did it. Was it Slott and Elred? Yeah,
Slott and Mike Allred.
Yeah. So, and those are just the ones that aren't covered by other stuff.
So, if you have not bought an omnibus before, or if you have and you're looking for omnibuses to get, we're going to give our fave five. These are not the best. These are not the ones where we go, this is sheer brilliance. Nope, these are our favorites. Such as, when somebody asks my favorite movie, I say Dawn of the Dead. I could watch that movie over and over and over and over and over. And yes, there are sequences where I go, oh, I don't like that. And I still am upset about the ending. But it's my favorite movie. Best movie I've ever seen? That would be Duck Soup. a perfectly made movie, followed very closely by Citizen Kane, which was one of the technically best films ever and still has a great story. There's a difference between your favorite and the best. So, Joe, we're going to start our Fave 5 with number 5.
Number 5.
What's your number 5?
I don't know if you count this as an omnibus, and good luck finding it. But I have in my greedy little hands my own copy of the Monster Society of Evil Deluxe Limited Collector Edition. This one, I had this once upon a time. I believe I ordered it from, who's that dude in Texas? Bud Sanders. Yeah, he had the big catalog all the time.
Yep.
And I ordered it. And what I should have done is ordered the slipcase that C.C. Beck, the artist and writer?
Yeah.
Yeah. He had been writing this. He had been getting ready to do a slipcase edition signed when he passed away. And somehow, was it Lone Star Comics? I forget the name of the catalog. They got a hold of not only the rest of these, but also the actual slipcase. And he'd only signed it wasn't a slipcase. It was a tipped-in sheet, and he'd only signed like 35 out of the 300 he had planned to do. And I could only afford one or the other, so of course I bought the case. And the next month I went to get the other thing; it was sold out. I had that for years until I think I ended up selling it to you, Mr. Strode.
Why, yes, you did. You put it up for sale, and it was, I am buying that.
Yep. And Corey was nice enough to loan it back to me so I could read through it. And then, of course, years later, I don't know how this guy found it, but somebody actually had a copy of it for $75. And I was like, oh, yeah. The reason why I love this is because, as Corey and I have talked about in podcast past, this is never, ever going to be reprinted. They've tried. I would love to. I mean, I actually refrained on buying this the first time around, the hardcover that I'm sitting in my greedy little hands, because I wanted it to see what DC was going to come up with. But eventually they decided not to, because just too racist. Am I saying that right?
That is correct.
Yeah. There were some really bad stereotypes of the worst type. And again, of the time, that's the way it was. And you would think we'd be mature enough to know, hey, this is the way it is. You're going to be uncomfortable about it, but this is what was published. But DC took the easy way and just canceled it. Or maybe sales sucked. Hard to tell.
Well, it's probably a little of both. The thing to remember with some of that stuff, I know in with the Warner Brothers cartoons, one of the things that they have done when they did the Golden Collections, when they got to, they've never put the Band 12, however many it is, that are just way too racist, but they will have Leonard Maltin introduce them and, you know, say, this is what it was like at the time. These were cultural stereotypes. We know better now. We present this as a historical record, not that we are approving of such things.
And I think they actually, they did air 7 of them on a June Bugs. Back when June would start, they would run all the Bugs Bunny cartoons they had.
They ran them in the middle of the night.
Yeah, middle of the night with Leonard Maltin, and my VCR failed. I did not catch them. I mean, it's not a great thing. You could probably find them on the YouTubes.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're looking for that. This deluxe edition, again, this is – oh, I can't – well, okay, where's my handy-dandy tape measure? It's – oversized slipcase. It measures, let's see, a dandy 14 by 10.5, about an inch thick. And it's a limited edition. They only made 3,000 of these. I've got number 1672. And the front, it's kind of fun because they have the decoder, because apparently there's messages throughout the series. A good historical coverage of not only how popular Captain Marvel was, but also the coming of this whole series. And it is just a blast to read, the racism stuff aside. If you can find yourself a a cheap copy. I've seen them in stores for $300. If you're lucky enough to get one of the 35 that you actually have the Tipton plate, good for you. But for me, this was a lot of fun. Again, the criteria, I will – I mean, you could probably go find the issues. What was this, 25-part?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, 25 issues or I don't know, but somebody probably put it online illegally. But, you know, I'll never get to read it outside of this book because I can't afford it. I don't know if
it would be illegal, Joe.
You think it might be out of print?
No, I think it might be out of copyright.
Oh.
The character is still trademarked, but I would have to look into, because if you look, that book was not licensed by DC.
No. This was Graffiti Inc., wasn't it?
No. It was a publisher, and that's, I think, all they did.
I'm cracking mine open again.
Fan publication.
Oh, America Nostalgia Library, an imprint of Hawk Books.
Yep, and if you look, you won't see where it says copyright DC Comics anywhere.
Interesting.
Because one of the things, Fawcett went out of business.
Well, they did.
So they were not able to renew the copyrights.
They did say in the copyright, Shazam is a trademark of DC Comics.
Right.
Used with permission.
Yep. It's a trademark, but the story itself, not copyrighted.
Well, no, they said this material copyright 1989 DC Comics.
Oh, okay.
So they did it. They did it with DC.
They did get permission. Okay.
So don't try it at home, folks.
You'd have to look that up. There are websites you can actually go to, and they will let you know what works are still in copyright.
So, again, either way, I recommend reading it, especially if you don't get all the clumped about the historical racism in it. How about you, Corey? What's your number five?
My number – first, I'm going to preface my fave five. You would think me as a huge Kirby fan – and a massive fan of his run on the Fantastic Four, I would name one of those. Here is the problem. The cutoff times in those omnibuses, like the first 30 issues, they're okay. They're not great. Then it goes from 31 to 60. And starting around issue 40, it gets great until around issue 75 or so. But you'd have to buy two different omnibuses to get that complete run where Kirby was on fire. So, Fantastic Four will not be listed because these are just five, not like, oh, the Fantastic Four omnibuses. So, my number five is Man-Thing. Yes, I make jokes about it all the time. However, the Man-Thing omnibus collects all the Man-Thing stories from the character's creation up until they pretty much put him out to pasture in the 80s. So it doesn't just have The Adventure of Fear and Man-Thing runs by Steve Gerber. It also has the tie-ins, like the Iron Man Annual number 3 that Gerber did. Crossovers he had over in Marvel 2 and 1. As well as the second series, which was done by Michael Fleischer and Chris Claremont. This is a monster of a book. It's around 1,200 pages. It shows Gerber's evolution as a creator, but it also has some amazing art. You've got John Buscema. You've got Mike Ploog. You've got Val Semeckis. You've got Frank Bronner. And it's so good because Gerber didn't do monster stories. He did human stories where the Man-Thing was almost a supporting character. This is one I can read over and over. And yes, the really early stories are, you know, about as ham-fisted as you get. But by the time you get to, like, issue 15, 16 of Adventure into Fear, Gerber was making masterpieces. Some of the stuff in this, you'll read and wonder how it even got printed. Because it's, you know, this was a monthly comic. How did they do a book this good on a monthly deadline? When now, if a book's that good, it's going to take 2-3 months between issues. An excellent read. The art is reproduced better than it ever has been. Most of these books were published on crappy paper with crappy printing presses. So they go back to the original film, It looks beautiful. You get to see the amount of love and detail people like Mike Plug were putting into their stories. It's an excellent book, and it was kind of Marvel's, I don't want to call it their flagship monster book, because their best-selling monster book, of course, was Tomb of Dracula. But this was the one that was winning all the awards. This was the one that people could not believe was this good. And yes, I will keep doing the man thing joke, but this is one of the best comics runs from Marvel, and it's easily one of the best omnibuses. Joe?
I'm just going to preface something as I'm just searching around looking for the Monster Society of Evil. Yeah. Oddly enough, you can go to the DC site, and they act like it's available, but it isn't. But I did find something called...
Now, is that the Monster Society of Evil done by Jeff Smith?
No.
Okay.
But it's also not available. You know, nope. they have available plotted out, but they give you links to Amazon and Barnes & Noble, of course, come up blank, except for used copies, which you can find. However, there's something called, I'm not even going to, Gwendanaland Comics number 1679, which I have no idea who publishes it, but apparently they reprint the entire thing in paperback for about anywhere from $28 to $72.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know anything else about that. Amazon's the only place I see it. So it's a physical copy, not a digital one. So as I like to say on the eBays, come get some. So you don't have to go expensive. One trend I hope I see that continues is when creators take their own works and whether they can do an omnibus, like I know Colleen Doran with A Distant Soil says she's working on trying to get everything in an omnibus form, versus someone like Jim Starlin, who took his Dreadstar and did a Kickstarter for all three volumes of Dreadstar. I love Jim Starlin's Dreadstar. I mean, and again, this is everything from the run where it originally appeared in Epic Illustrated, the Marvel magazine, to The Price, which I believe was a graphic novel published by Eclipse.
Yes.
And from there, was there something else, or did it go right into an Epic series?
Yeah, it went in. There was the story in Epic magazine, then The Price, and then the Dreadstar graphic novel.
Yes, that was before that. And this was Marvel's oversized graphic novels.
The ones that were based on the European graphic albums.
Yeah. The first of which was The Death of Captain Marvel, so you probably, if you remember that. And then Dreadstar was one of those. Then it went to the Epic print line, and I forget how many issues he did before he handed the reins over to Peter David. Hey, back to Peter again.
I think it was 36.
Yeah.
Because then they went over to First Comics with issue 41.
Yeah. And I'll look that up, that detail up while I'm talking. But Jim did a Kickstarter a while back where he was offering this as a chance to get it all in print for once. And I jumped all over it. I went full bore and went all three issues. So I got all three volumes of it. And it's just one of those. It's just so much fun. It's kind of weird to see him from the Epic where everything was black and white and painted to get into the other graphic novels and then to get into actual comic book form. But it's done in three volumes, a little more pricey than some. But it's a fantastic series. And then, of course, I spent years digging up the Peter David stuff. And it's basically till issue 40 is Jim Starlin. And then at issue 41, Peter David starts. It was some hack named Angel Medina doing the art. I don't know why. But and then after that, there was a Malibu series, which... you know, I don't actually know if it's in here. However,
I don't know if it got finished.
No, I think that was one of the few that did. And I'm just going to look issues 1 through 40, a rare Starlin short story, Amber. Nope, it's not part of this. So maybe it didn't. All I know is part of their, what did Malibu call their line?
Bravura.
Yeah, and it had a bunch of creators bringing their books in, and Dreadstar was one of it. And it was kind of fun because it took place in the future with Dreadstar's daughter. And, of course, that always leads to, well, where's the original Dreadstar? But the graphic novels themselves, or I should say the omnibuses themselves, three volumes. If you go to www. I think it's omnuspress.com. O-M-I-N-O-U-S.
Ominous.
Thank you. Press.com. You should still be able to pick these up. So, and of course, I did mine through the Kickstarter. They've been a lot of fun to read. This is a case of, first of all, I wanted to support Jim Starlin. I thought it was a brilliant idea what he was doing. And second, these are books that, while I have the runs downstairs, the three omnibuses take up less space. They're in a much more desirable package. Yeah,
probably you look better too.
Yes, and also, you know, you miss the letter pages and sometimes the house ads and things like that. But I put my money where my mouth is. I originally ordered the first, and then I canceled it and said, you know what, I'm going to do all three. So, but like I said, I will, while Corey talks about his next one, I will check online for you and see if they are still available.
One of the things about the omnibuses is that they can reprint an entire crossover. We've talked in the past about Infinity Gauntlet. Infinity War is going to be, you know, is one book. I think they're doing Infinity Crusade soon, and I don't know if that'll be one book or two. If it's two, that's just crazy talk. But one of the best things about an omnibus is it can gather together all the crossovers. Over at DC, my number four is Infinite Crisis. Infinite Crisis came about at a time when DC was actually firing on all cylinders. They had great creators. They had Jeff Johns, Mark Waid, Grant Morrison, Greg Rucka. They just had a fireball team. And they had done such a great job of building up to Infinite Crisis that when it came out, I was more excited about that than anything anybody else was doing. And the Infinite Crisis book reprints all of the things that led up to Infinite Crisis, all the tie-ins, and then the stuff after that leads to 52. It's a 1,500-page book. It's $150. And it is worth it. It is a fantastic superhero story. For the fact that it's done by so many different people, it ties together so well. The story itself is very cool and very strong. And the thing about it is that it collects everything together in one place. That takes a lot of work on your hand. You know, okay, here's a list of everything I need. I need to buy these back issues, and I need to get this, and there are these trades, and there's this. Nope, it's all in one package. Beautifully put together. The whole story right there, which is what an omnibus should be. An omnibus should be, unless it's, you know, two or three volumes, it should be where everything's there. And that's what Infinite Crisis is. Everything's there, and you can read it all without having to go search for other books. And I'm not going to say it's great, but man, I love that story. I love that story. It's one of my favorites. It's a big superhero crossover that actually feels like a big superhero crossover where everything is in trouble and the heroes have to work together. So my number four, Infinite Crisis. Joe, what's your number three?
My number three is a DC one that I bought, and pretty much to echo what you said about Infinite Crisis, DC 1 Million Omnibus by Grant Morrison. The 1 Million thing was a time travel type tale that crossed over into
everything.
Yeah, pretty much. And it all came, you'd be reading along in your book, and all of a sudden there was, here's Catwoman 1 million, or Batman 1 million, Detective 1 million, so. The gist the of
premise
it was...
The premise of the story is, these are the 1 millionth issues of these comics.
And the Justice, what did they call them, Justice League? It's been a while. Justice Legion A comes back in time to invite the greatest heroes of the 20th century forward, the Justice League of America, so they can travel to the future and take part in a celebration of the return of the original Superman from his long exile in the heart of the sun. But both teams fall victim to a plot that of millennia in the making. The JLA are stranded in the far future. The Justice League A are stranded in the present. And there's a deadly virus going around that they've unwillingly brought into the past. And they have quite possibly the greatest, scariest villain I have ever seen anywhere. Solaris, the Living Sun?
Yes.
I don't know. The visuals on this thing scared me. And when you get to the final end of it, when the heroes are talking, they say, well, we know Solaris will visit us at least once in our lifetime. Granted, with New 52 and Final Crisis and yada, yada, yada. It's kind of a character that's been forgotten, although utterly, utterly terrifying when I read it. Even the visuals of Solaris just scare me. But this is the set. This is the series done right. Basically, everything is set up. You can just barrel through it and read everything and discover what's going on. And by the time you get to the end, there's actually include a couple like sequels. I think The World's Finest, but I don't recall what it's printed in. One thing DC's doesn't do, which I kind of wish they would because I just think it's a cool visual. On the back cover, Marvel shows all the issues that are involved in the book, which is fun, especially when you see, oh, they did remember this crossover, things like that. DC does not do that for whatever reason. I would still not hesitate to read this because, first of all, this is Grant Morrison at one of his peaks, bringing up concepts and designs and characters that you're just going to go, huh. And the whole twisty, timely, wibbly-wobbly thing works. Just a fantastic omnibus. When this was offered, I believe I bought this secondhand. I don't recall if I ordered this, you know, when it was offered. But unless you want to dig through and pick up tons of 1 million issues, which I don't think are extremely valuable, but they're going to be tough to find because nobody cares or nobody's carrying them. But again, this is the way. Like,
there are a lot of books that were canceled. So it's, oh, you have to. Once a book is, let's say it's a DC book that lasted 9 issues in the 90s and gets canceled, no one cares. They're going to put it in the dollar bin. Get rid of it.
Starman, I'm looking at you. Catwoman's another one. I'm just flipping through randomly and Detective's still published. Anyways, this is the only way to read this series, you know, unless you're hardcore and want to pick everything up. I don't think DC will have the same problem that Marvel might. Like, you know, I talked about the Secret Wars 2 omnibus, which I love. And the only ones that aren't in there are, I believe, like Micronauts, because it crossed over into the Microverse. They refer to it, and there was probably, maybe she was actually in it. There was a character that appeared in Transformers, but I believe the character is owned by Marvel, so they could put her in there. So DC, as far as I know, doesn't really have that problem because they weren't doing a lot of licensed books that tied into the regular universe. So, number three for me recommended is DC 1 million. How about yours, Mr. Strode?
My number three is another one published by Marvel, but it doesn't have a single Marvel superhero in it. That is Oz.
I was going to guess that.
Oz is written by Eric Schanauer, who actually wrote and drew adaptations of the original Oz books for First Comics. But he was doing them in that European album, so he would have to take the entire book of Dorothy and the Wonderful Wizard of Oz or The Marvelous Land of Oz and condense it down to 48 pages. In the 2000s, Marvel started doing adaptations of novels, classic novels, to try and get in on, basically to get these books into libraries. Roy Thomas did a lot of them, and they did The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. Eric Schadauer wrote it, and an artist named Scotty Young drew it. And Scotty Young drew it. He had done some regular Marvel stuff that was very manga in style, inspired, such as the Human Torch run, where he did 8 issues with Carl Kessel. Really good run, but nobody cared. Scotty Young, nobody much, you know, was very manga-influenced art. He was able to get jobs, but it wasn't like anybody was looking for his stuff. This changed that because he developed his own style that fit perfectly with the Oz books. Very cartoony, very, very animation-influenced art. And also it showcased his ability to for characters to look like they're in motion. Marvel, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz actually sold really well, so they greenlit a few more. They did, let's see here, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, The Marvelous Land of Oz, Ozma of Oz, Dorothy and the Wizard in Oz, Road to Oz, and The Emerald City of Oz. All as miniseries. Marvel collected them as an omnibus. I picked it up because I like Scotty Young and I like Eric Schanauer's Oz, the original Oz book. And it blew me away how fantastic this was. This is a beautiful, beautiful book. The stories are direct from the novels. Scotty Young's art grows by leaps and bounds over these miniseries to the point where he becomes one of the best cartoonists working today. And Eric Schanauer's love of the original book shines through in how he treats the material with care and takes it seriously rather than looking at the Wizard of Oz movie and moving things toward that like everybody else has done other than the 80s movie Road to Oz, which freaked everybody out. But he stays true to the novels, and it's this is kind of one of those things where the omnibus format fits it well because it's here are all these novels. We're going to put them all together in one so that it's all there in one place. I cannot recommend this stuff enough. If you only know the Oz books from the Wizard of Oz movie, do yourself a favor and pick this up because you're going to get blown away at how deep and rich the fantasy aspect of the Oz novels were. Joe, what's your number two?
Oh, I don't know, because I was going to pick Infinity Crisis Omnibus as well, because like you said, it's an incredible crossover. Matter of fact, if you're a Superboy Prime fan, he's going to show up in Shazam number 12. But I hate to repeat myself, so I'm going to, at great risk of life and limb, go to the very top shelf. Oh, my God, I may not survive. Oh, my God. Oh, what's a few spine cords fused together? Oh, my God, it's on my testicles. Oh.
It's going to be Star Wars Droids and Ewoks, isn't it?
No, it was close. Nope. Frank Miller's Big Damn Sin City. Hot damn. This is freaking huge. It's the night is hot as hell. And with those 6 scrappy words, Wonder Kid Frank Miller ushered in a scrappy new hero in a scrappy new series with a scrappy young publishing company, breaking all the conventional rules and in the process revolutionizing the world of so-called funny books. All the way back, 1991 was the first Sin City in, I think it was Dark Horse Presents, wasn't it?
Yep.
That was kind of their anthology thing?
Yep, and it was the beginning of the Legend line. The other thing about it, I don't mean to cut you off, Miller had a new art style. where he did kind of reverse, almost a reverse, where the things that were supposed to be dark and black were white, and the things that were supposed to be white were black. Oh. And it gave it a completely different look. And as I describe it, you're going to go, well, that doesn't make any sense. But once you see it, you'll understand he was basically reversing everything to give it a classic film noir feel.
And then this thing, I mean, basically Sin City is about 7 graphic novels, all written and drawn by Frank Miller. All 7 yarns are here in one monster volume suitable for home defense, over 1,300 big damn pages of unmatched intensity.
And isn't it bigger than a regular comic, too?
Oh, God, yeah.
Taller? Yeah.
Let me, as long as I got it down, let's see. Yeah, Infinity Crisis, you look like a peewee compared to this thing. I mean, seriously, I felt the foundations in my house groan as I shifted the weight over on this thing. This is a really, really cool book. I know my daughter grabbed it and held onto it for a couple years and read through it. I'm going to have to talk to her. There's a number of scratches on it. But, hey, it doesn't stop you from reading it. And, oh, my God, the art in this huge format versus you know, just comic book size is just incredible. So I don't even know if this thing's available anymore. Again, I will do the Kraytron 3000 while Corey talks. The Dreadstar books I mentioned earlier are available if you want to go to Jim's site. He has them individually, has them digitally. Also has a big 3-set slipcase, which is really cool. And again, big damn Sin City. I will check on the availability while Corey delves into his number 2.
My number 2 is another DC crossover, and it's another book by Grant Morrison, and it is Final Crisis. I know that there are people who get confused when they have read Final Crisis. I was not one of them, and I was so steeped in the lore of both Grant Morrison, who was the writer, and Jack Kirby, the creator of the New Gods, that to me, it was all, well, this is like standard comic book knowledge. Morrison actually started building it in his Seven Soldiers of Victory story. But what this is the conclusion of the New Gods saga. Darkseid has found the anti-life equation and uses it. The War of the Gods has ended, and Darkseid has won. As you read this, Morrison continuously raises the stakes, knowing that he is treating this as Darkseid won. We start after Darkseid has won and taken over the universe. The heroes have to find a way to fight back. This collects everything. It's another one of these massive tomes, and it collects everything tied in with Final Crisis. The build-up to Final Crisis was botched by the editorial to the point so bad that Morrison almost walked. But instead, he delivered a story that hits on all cylinders. This is a book that I've read the comic when it came out. A matter of fact, when a new issue would come out, I would actually call Joe and go, oh my God, did you see that? I read the novel. And if you did have trouble understanding what was going on in the comic, read the novel, then go back and read the comic. Because the novel puts it very linearly and gives more information so that what's happening in the comic, you have a little more context in your head. You have a little more of the backstory. And you start going, oh yeah. But this is a book I go back to more than once, and it's all in one big book. My only small problem is they did 4 miniseries after Final Crisis was over using the characters created in Final Crisis. That's not in this because it would probably make it like a 2,000-page book. But still, a fantastic book, one of my favorite crossovers by one of my favorite writers. using my favorite DC characters. How could this not be in my top five? Matter of fact, every time I even talk about it, it's like, I need to go back and read that again. Joe, it's time for your favorite omnibus. And he's on mute again.
Yeah, coughing in your ear isn't good.
All right, hang on a second. Oh, look at that. I can one-hand it, baby.
Oh, my God. This is the one that I died for. And I, fortunately, through Comic College of Comic Book Knowledge, I was able to get a copy of it at a decent price. I'm talking, of course, the Infinity Gauntlet. This is it. This is everything. This includes the run-up to it, where it started in Silver Surfer, the two-part Thanos quest, which, as I've told in stories ad infinity, where I was telling people, guys, you got to read this. Oh, but it's all $2.99. No, trust me. Thanos just became the most powerful being in the universe. Oh, I don't want it. So then let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months later when definitely 4 months later when Silver Surfer went crashing into Doctor Strange Sanctum in Infinity Gauntlet number one. All of a sudden, everybody, oh, my, do you have that Thanos quest? Yeah, they're $20 a pop now. I absolutely love this because it includes all the miniseries. I don't recall if there were any licensed series going on at the time that couldn't be included, but it looks like everything is part of this. And what's interesting, though, and we talked about this past. I borrowed this to a friend of mine who was really big on Infinity Gauntlet, and he absolutely loved it up until the Infinity Gauntlet 6, which was like halfway through the book. And then when the crossovers came, he was like, what is this? I said, well, these are books that were going concurrently with it. They don't directly tie into the storyline because you don't have to read them, but they do go with it. And, not being comic book based, it totally threw him. So, and even to this day, he bitches about it because every time I brought him a book, he's like, it's not gonna cut off in the middle of story, is it? And like, dude, you just don't get it. I tried to explain
to him. Of course not.
I tried to explain in football language. I said, okay, you're watching the Vikings, but you're paying attention to what's going on in Dallas too, or Green Bay. Yeah, but they're not part of what's going on in the Vikings, are they? Whatever, it didn't work. So, but for me, this is almost the perfect quintessential thing. It's got all the crossovers. It's got everything in it. I don't know if you could conceivably put the crossover issues into other places. I mean, maybe you could. You could, like, where was it? When Hulk got shrunk down and then was thrown into a bar with the Abomination. Yeah, you could probably take a break in between issues and put the actual crossover issues. It might be more fun that way. I don't know. It might be a lot of editorial, like, I don't know. What do you think, Corey? Do you think it works as it is, or do you think they could do the extras and put the crossovers where they belong?
I much prefer when they put the crossovers where they belong. And in other books, Marvel has done that. I wonder why it was done this way. Still, this is Marvel's big... this is one of Marvel's big crossovers that worked. A lot of their big crossovers, you go into it and go, okay, we know why they're doing this, to raise sales on the lower books. But this is one where Jim Starlin started a story and everybody wanted to jump in. Because I think I've told the story before. Starlin was the writer on Silver Surfer, but the writer before him on Silver Surfer was Steve Englehart. Steve Englehart said to the editor, I want to bring Thanos back. And the editor's like, who's Thanos? Think about that. In 87, 88, editorial at Marvel had forgotten the character of Thanos. Starlin came in, and Starlin just did what he wanted to. He said, okay, I'm going to use this character. Oh, okay. Sure. And I'm building up to this. And he brought in George Perez, and they're like, oh, okay, George Perez wants to do a big wants to do one of our big crossovers? Cool. And then that brought Thanos back to being one of Marvel's big villains. Think about what Marvel would have been like if Starlin had not have come back.
And the other thing amazing about this, before Infinity Gauntlet, the story started 18 months before Infinity Gauntlet 1 hit. So he had this planned out long before. And you see that a lot now, especially, I can't remember his name. Jason Aaron on War of the Realms. He had this planned out years before it hit. I don't know if it's editorial that jumps on board and creates like 300 one-shots, crossovers, and things like that. But
marketing, the marketing department.
Yeah, which is why I always say when these crossovers come, I'm going to buy the regular crossover and wait for the omnibus. But again, this is probably what set the tone. It's like, okay, guys, we got an event coming up next summer. It's not like Secret Wars where it's like, oh yeah, this just happens now, which again for the time was fresh when Secret Wars hit. All of a sudden, everybody disappeared for a month. They came back the next month, and we didn't know what was going on. But I think this is more norm of the storytelling. I mean, you look at like Jonathan Hicks with Avengers, and did he have Secret Wars all plotted out? Because it seems like everything was slowly leading towards it, even though there was a, what did they call it? Infinity, a little crossover in between. So that's, I think, where omnibuses shine. They take it all. They put it all together. Whether you're doing a complete run, like you mentioned earlier, Man-Thing. Oh, believe me, I've got a Man-Thing omnibus because it's got everything in it versus something like this where it's got the whole story and ready to go. That's where I think the omnibuses shine. And this, to me, is my number one because I can just sit and I can read it. I can read just the Infinity Gauntlet if I want. I can go into the crossovers. I can start from the beginning and plow through the Thanos quest. I believe that's where Thanos discovers the origins of the gem. The only thing they didn't include in here was the Ultraverse, where that seventh gem was the actual being consciousness. Remember, he's the one who supposedly, I can't handle it anymore, and did a cosmic suicide creating the six gems. But, you know, hey, there'll be an Ultraverse omnibus, right? Right, Corey? Right?
Hold your breath on that, Joe.
Okay. Well, you tell me number one, and I'm going to lovingly put my Infinity Gauntlet back on the shelf.
My number one, Jack Kirby, The Fourth World. This reprints the entire run of Kirby's masterwork when he came to DC from Marvel. New Gods, Forever People, Jimmy Olsen, and Mr. Miracle. It also includes all the extra stories. It includes they did a reprint of the New Gods in the early 80s where he had a new 72-page New Gods story that led into the Hunger Dogs. Sadly, they don't have the original version of the Hunger Dogs. They do have it in small so that you can see it before it was kind of recut and remastered for the printed version. But this is all of it. This is the whole thing. This is what an omnibus is for. I bought this when they put it out in, remember they first did the New Gods and they did it in these black and white trade paperbacks on crappy newsprint. Then they did what they called the Fourth World Omnibus, which were four hardcovers. And then they finally have done an omnibus. I bought it in all formats. The New Gods is one of my favorite stories ever. It is Jack Kirby unleashed. It is Jack Kirby at the height of his creative power, just throwing out new ideas like he's exploding.
Now, I do have a question for you.
Sure.
My recollection of Jack Kirby's Fourth World were in like deluxe comic book size where they reprinted everything, and then Jack came on board and was allowed to finish, in air quotes, the saga the way he wanted.
Yep, that was in New Gods number 6. It was a 72-page story that led into the Hunger Dogs.
Is that part of this, or is
yep.
it?
Yep.
Because Kirby just was like stuff. Unceremoniously dumped in the DC explosion. Implosion,
well,
sorry.
What it was, the New Gods, just go back and listen to, if you want all the details, just go to the webpage and you'll see one of the section, one of the groupings you can do. Click on Jack Kirby and it has all of my Jack Kirby podcasts. But what it was, they canceled it saying that it was due to poor sales. The sales were actually better than over 3/4 of what DC was publishing. But they were printing the issues with the same, with, they were printing around 750,000 copies of each one. So the sell-through was only like 50%, which means it was still selling over 300,000 copies.
Boy, they'd give eye teeth to do that today.
They were giving eye teeth for it when Jeanette Kahn took over in 76, which is why they brought the New Gods back immediately. But they canceled the New Gods books and had Kirby work on other things. That's why you got Commandi and the other stuff that he did at the time. What? He was doing Commandi and the Losers afterward. So...
I always thought when I read that, it was kind of a cop-out. Because I was all like, oh, the big fight between Orion and Darkseid. And again, if you want to throw up a spoiler warning for a, 40, 50-year-old comic, yeah. Go ahead. But it was kind of like, and then all of a sudden, Darkseid, like, pulled a fast one and a bunch of his cronies shot up Orion and tossed him in a dung heap. And I was kind of like, that was it? And I was always baffled because the buildup was, this is the way Kirby wanted it. And I'm like, did he really? Or was this just because this wanted, is a setup?
It was the setup for the Hunger Dogs. Now, one of the things I'll say about the New Gods, Kirby was making it up as he went. Would that have been the ending if he was still doing it in the 70s? No.
No.
Would it be the ending he would have done it if he would have come back after his contract with Marvel was over in 78? Nope. Because he was just, he was making it up as he went. He knew kind of where he wanted to go, and he knew kind of how he wanted it to end. I remember reading Mark Evanier saying that when Kirby was working on that 72-page New Gods story, he called Mark Evanier and said, I don't have Darkseid's voice anymore. Because Darkseid was based on Nixon. And Nixon had left the public consciousness. He wasn't saying, you know, he was wearing his shorts with a metal detector on San Clemente Beach. Oh, I think I found a quarter. So it took him a while to get Darkseid's voice back. So, but this is the ending that was done. And basically what they did when they were reprinting the New Gods in those hardcovers, I'm sorry, in the press, the Baxter format, they said, okay, well, we need something to fill these 72 pages. We'll commission a new story that leads into the graphic novel. So when Kirby started work on that 72-page story, it was to lead into the graphic novel, and the New God, the Hunger Dogs, was going to be the ending. The only thing that DC changed was you can't kill them all because we've got this marketing deal with superpowers. We're going to keep using Darkseid because we've got toys and we've got a cartoon, and Darkseid's going to be used on Super Friends. So Kirby came up with the ending, but didn't kill anyone that he had planned to kill off.
And that's the short version.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, we don't just do this podcast, Joe.
Oh, hell no.
I do tons of other podcasts like these. The Solitaire Rose Podcast Network is filled with all kinds of audio goodness. First, there's Crazy Comics and Stories. It's been going since 2010. It drops every Monday, and it has me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, and Joe Crazy Writer, talking comics, shenanigans, and whatever we're freaking and geeking about. Every Monday morning. It's been going since 2010, and it's available at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. Also on that same feed is the Solitaire Rose podcast, which is me, again, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, doing interviews, talking about comics, talking about comics history, pretty much talking about whatever I want to talk about. We've also got Solo Joe, where Joe Crazy Rider does a solo podcast, and he hasn't done one in a while, so kick him in the shins to get him started. We also, on that same feed, have Solitaire Rose Series and Review, where we do DVD commentary of older comic book series. That's all at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. I also do a podcast with Wolfie B. Bad at badadvice.solitairerose.com, where we take listener questions and give them bad advice. There's also Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's at novels.solitairerose.com. There's also Fantastic Forecast, where myself and Adam Vermillion are going through the entire run of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time. That's fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com. And if you think that I'm on all of these podcasts, you're wrong, because Scrabbling Across the West is at scrabbling.solitairerose.com, where musician Dave Coffell and his wife Stephanie travel across America and then sitting down to play Scrabble and talk about the day. That's at Scrabbling Across the West, scrabbling.solitairerose.com. There are always more podcasts at the Solitaire Rose Podcast Network. Be there. Aloha. And now that that's done, we get to Joe's favorite part of the show. No, 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 not where he stacks up all his omnibuses and climbs them to the sky.
And I'll do it too!
No, it's Joe. What's going on the eBays?
Oh, there's always something on the eBays. Matter of fact, more than likely, I have put tons of stuff on there, and I've sold tons of stuff. For example, if you wanted to go on the eBays and find yourself your own Frank Miller's Big Damn Sin City hardcover, as of this recording, they're as low as $85 sealed, or as high as, well, you're not stupid enough to go that, are you? But you can always check to see what I've got going. I sell under the Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. Tell me you listen to this here podcast, and I will toss in an extra bonus. And believe me, I got tons of stuff to give you. Not just keys to the Strode compound, not just autographed copies of Worldwide News. I've got all sorts of fun stuff. I mean, fun stuff. So after you're here with this here fill-in, be rest assured I've probably been eBaying while you're listening to this. And nothing left to say but come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, 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 not where I sneeze. Not where I down the bottle of Rat Bastard root beer, tastes like a son of a bitch. And remember, it's us against them. No, it's freaking and geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
Well, up until now, dry ears. No, I think as this is probably a fill-in, I'll just give my normal freak I have about omnibuses. It's just that, and Corey's talked about it too. There, see, I mute when I sneeze. Oh my gosh, you guys, Marvel, DC, you're killing me, man. You go months with hardly anything, and then all of a sudden, bam, let's do five in 1 month. And the fact that we're prepaying them and that we have no idea if they'll ever be published, DC, I'm looking at you. These got to be damn profitable for Marvel and DC or anybody else who cares to do one, because first of all, they're only in the direct market. They're not available outside your local comic book store, other than buying them used on Amazon, eBay, Half Price Books, things like that. But really, you think the one thing I've liked when DC posts them, well, maybe I'll save that for geeking, but that's what I really dislike is the fact that they come in waves, and you know, I'm plunking down my money for something that's 6 months away, and I really have no guarantee that I'm going to get it because somebody up the food chain may just decide, you know what? I think that the whole Monster Society thing's a little bit racy for us sensitive snowflakes. Let's just cancel it. So that's about it. And other than that, Corey, what you freaking on?
I probably shouldn't personally freak on this, but business-wise, I freak on this because personally, I love that they do this. Absolutely love it. But as a business, I'm really freaking out that both Marvel and DC, after the omnibuses have been in their warehouse for about 6-7 months, we got to dump them all. Got to get rid of them. They're not selling fast enough, so let's get rid of them. 10 cents on the dollar. Just move them out the door. Then 6 months to a year later, they look on Amazon and see that the stuff's going for $500, $600, $700, $800 and reprint it. And when they reprint it, it sells 1,000, 1,500 copies. Now, first off, I don't understand why. Hey, Infinity Gauntlet, a year ago, we were bargaining them out. And now when we, because we had 200 in the warehouse we couldn't sell. Now, we sold 1,500 of them. The market for the omnibuses is very strange. I do like the fact that Marvel has said the Epic line, which is kind of what they use to take the place of the Essentials, which are, you know, big, thick books that reprint 20 to 30 issues. Those will stay in print, and if they go out of print, they'll reprint them, which is a cool way because it means, okay, I can get the complete run of Spider-Man. I can get the complete run of, you know, blah, blah, blah. But with the omnibuses, there was one where they were bargaining it out, and I was able to get it for $20. And then 2 months later, there it is. It's in Amazon. It's in previews again. They're reprinting it, full price. Look, you need to treat these the way you treated the Masterworks in the 90s and the archives in the 90s. No, they're not going to sell 500 copies a month, but you're going to sell 30, 40, 50, 60 a month if you keep them in print. That's, let's see, 50 omnibuses, that's $1,000 that you make. Just keep them in print, okay? Yeah, I doubt you're going to sell many of The Crossing, but Fantastic Four number one, you're going to sell. Infinity Gauntlet, you're going to sell. John Byrne's Fantastic Four is going to sell.
You didn't even have Infinity Gauntlet ready when the movie hit. I mean, come on.
I know. So, Joe, what are you geeking on with omnibuses?
One thing I am geeking on is when they do offer them in previews, and this is more DC than Marvel, they do list the old ones. So when I'm figuring out, did I order Grant Morrison's omnibus number one? You know I did. But I was like, did I order number two? Well, I was able to go. No, I did.
Oh.
Because I was able to go and they said, okay, it's available here. I look back at my records and go, yep, I did order it. God knows where it is because I do have my omnibuses and 90% of them are in my room here. There's a few I've borrowed to my daughters, like Alias. And then I think Howard the Duck is still downstairs because that was, again, another one I picked up because of the complete collection. I know my old partner, Pat, loves the omnibuses because, you know, it gives him a chance to have everything, sell off the comics because, you know, he doesn't want to carry him around in his old age. And then he likes them because he says they sit on the exercise bike almost perfect so he can read them while he's exercising. I haven't tried that yet, but there's a way to stay healthy other than, you know, just moving them to the top shelf, taking them down again, things like that. And you don't run the risk of a hernia either. So,
a hernia.
The other thing I do like about the omnibuses, and again, this is a business thing, mostly because of the eBays. Boy, if I did miss out on the Hulk, Peter David Volume 1, because I didn't have the funds that month, I just wait because somebody's going to have them on eBay's close, if not below half price. Heck, I don't even care if it's like 40% off, you know. A lot of times they offer free shipping, which is saying a lot because these things are heavy. So if you pay attention to when they're supposed to come out, you can still jump on board and you don't have to miss out on anything. One thing I would like, and again, this is more of a mini freaking, but you know, like when you're doing the Avengers, Jonathan Hicks, Volume 1, let me know when Volume 2 is coming out. You know, or will be. It would be nice. I mean, I'm pretty pretty set now that DC with the Grant Morrison omnibuses are doing them yearly. And really, this is my own personal problem that I don't have them in order. But I will get them in order, so then when the next time it comes up, I won't be questioning, do I have it? Do I need to order Volume 2? Nope. They're right on the shelf. And they do look good on the shelf. Corey, what you geeking on?
Well, when it comes to omnibuses, I love the fact that it's an entire run. For early Marvel stuff, here's Fantastic Four, 1, 2, and 3. Okay, that takes me up to around issue 80-something. Now, the next omnibus will not end the Kirby run because it goes past that. But still, such a cool format. The first Doctor Strange has the entire Ditko run in one book. The Captain America by Jack Kirby has his entire 70s run in one book. They just put out a Phoenix omnibus. Has all of the X-Men stories that led up to the death of the Phoenix and some of the stuff after in one book. The Annihilation stuff. Annihilation's in one book. The sequel's in one book. Now, the problem with the third Annihilation story is it was so damn big, it was three omnibuses. But still, it's so cool to have these big stories or important runs by creators in one book. More and more, a lot of creators are putting their stuff together, not just for, you know, writing for the trade, but no, they're writing a long story that has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it fits perfectly in these omnibuses because they're 30, 60, you know, 90 issue runs, and it's a perfect way to collect that stuff so that you can get the whole thing rather than having 15 hardcovers. It's three really big books. It's just, and they put a lot of care into the printing of these. I know that one of the things about 60s and 70s books is, even into the 80s, the printing was terrible. I still remember getting my first issue of Crisis on Infinite Earths, and the coloring was off register. They were using the flexographic press for the first time, and the page that really made me angry, Joe, remember the page where we finally see the monitor?
Oh, yeah.
And he has the three, you know, the hair that has kind of the three
cornrows.
Yeah, cornrows. The color was off by about a quarter of an inch. Oof. Because it was later in the run, and the flexographic presses use plastic plates rather than metal plates, so they would warp over time. So the later you got in the run, the more the printing was screwed up. These are beautifully printed on some of the best paper for printing. And I know there are a lot of people, oh, I don't like the shiny paper. I wish it was on newsprint. No. I want it on the best possible paper. Some of the stuff from the 70s, I think when you and I reviewed Master Kung Fu, you could tell the stuff where the artist cared deeply about what they were doing because the art is beautiful. And then the giant size where Vince Coletta inked it, and you could tell that he just adds a background figure. Who cares? Dot, dot, line. Yeah. This guy's got a square head because I don't give enough of a shit to ink it well. But the pages where the inker did care just blow you away that they put that much detail into a page, knowing that it wouldn't reproduce well, that it wouldn't look half as good. But now in these formats, it looks so good. The ones that make me happiest are the ones that include a bunch of back matter. The Kirby ones are always really good about showing some of the penciled pages pre-inking, or character designs, or the initial pitch for the series, or a script, or, you know, some of the original art. It's like buying a Criterion DVD of something rather than just the bargain DVD out of the Walmart bin. And that's what I love the best about them. This is archival quality publishing of stuff that, in my mind, really deserves it. Well, believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books, even though we missed the deadline, for an hour and a half.
Damn deadlines.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, Joe.
You know, we've been talking about omnibuses. Corey, you want to hear a joke about a piece of paper?
No.
Ah, never mind. It's terrible. Hit my music.
Done, bitches!